Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Sacred Magic, a Wild Hunt novel, by Yasmin Gallinorn. Narrated by Cassandra Campbell. Chapter 1. Damn it! I dodged the dagger as it whistled past me, the blade coming dangerously close to slicing my nose off. How many blades were these goblins carrying? Too damn many, I thought as another came spiraling toward me. I was near a cedar tree, so I took a chance and darted behind it, pressing flat against the trunk. As I rested, panting, I took stock of the situation. We were still facing 6 goblins, and the sub-fae didn't seem to be tiring. They were armed with a fuck-ton of daggers and who knew what else. And they didn't seem to care if they lost their blades because they were sending them after us at a daunting speed. The scary part was how accurate they were. Victor's bicep had already been a target, and he'd had to yank the blade out from where it had lodged in the muscle. Yutani had barely avoided being skewered in the jugular. Instead, the goblin had managed to graze his throat, which wasn't good, but it was better than a severed artery. Hearn and I were uninjured so far. But I wasn't laying odds that our luck would hold out. As I caught my breath, I tried to figure out how best to work my way around to the back of the group. I glanced around, trying to think of a plan. We were on the outskirts of the Carlsford Cafe and Cattle Ranch, an urban ranch owned by Jed and Maxine Collins. They also ran a diner and a storefront, where they sold beef, milk, and butter. The ranch was located near Crystal Lake, off Crystal Lake Road. The Collinses had retained the services of the Wild Hunt a couple of weeks before to chase down a group of sub-fae who were scaring their cattle and stealing vegetables from the expansive garden they kept for their cafe. A couple of calves had also gone missing. The cows had been bewitched and were drying up, which was hurting the calves as well as milk sales. Neither Jet nor Maxine were sure why the goblins were picking on them, but they wanted the creatures gone as soon as we could hunt them down and dispatch them. We had already tried twice to eradicate the goblins, with no results. Kippa and Hearn had even managed to chase down one of the creatures and destroy him, but that hadn't stopped the vermin. Goblins were like rodents. Let one loose into an area, and it was an open invitation to a dozen brothers and sisters. They took advantage of every opportunity that came their way. Not to mention, goblins, along with other sub-fae, were supposed to stay outside of the city limits, but they never paid any attention to the rules. I took a deep breath, a cloud of vapor coalescing in front of my mouth. We were just coming out of a 2-week snowstorm, and while the snow had partially melted and we were back to rain again, there were clumps of dirty frozen ice and compacted snow scattered around, especially in the shaded woodlands. At least it was melting, though the rain was creating a slushy mess. Wiping my forehead, I brushed away stray beads of the water that had drizzled down from the skies. Late January was a dreary time of year in the Seattle area, and February even worse. Letting out an exasperated sigh, I adjusted my grip on my handheld crossbow. At least we had managed to take down 3 of the goblins so far, but there were 6 left, and they were determined to have their fun. Sub-fae could be incredibly stupid. You'd think they would back off when they realized we were stronger than they were, but it finally dawned on me that the sub-fae just didn't care. They didn't reason things out logically. They were rabid little buggers, or not so little as the case may be, and they were determined. And they were all too good with weaponry. Both Yutani and Victor had brushed off their wounds and were fighting on, but I hoped that we could wrap this up and get back to the agency soon. Victor was massive, with muscles on his muscles, given he was a half-ogre, but the goblins sometimes used poison, and that could down even a half-ogre like Victor. And Yutani? Well, he was lithe, if wiry, and I was worried about the amount of blood he might be losing. I cautiously peeked around the edge of the tree. There, directly in my line of sight, skulked one of the goblins. He was focused on Yutani. trying to track him. The creature might be small, but he was tough. What he and his ilk wanted with the vegetables was a mystery. Goblins were mostly carnivorous, and they loved human flesh most of all. But beggars can't be choosers, as the old saying went. And anything that either was or had been alive was considered fair game. I tried to pinpoint the remaining knobs, as we called them, but they were good at cloaking their presence. Squinting, I tried to pick out anything that might remotely be considered a part of goblin anatomy. Knobs had scattered patches of hair on their heads, rough like steel wool, and their faces were lined and wrinkled, even when they were babies. With wide-set, beady eyes and sharp yellow teeth, they were ugly suckers, and they always made me queasy because they stank to high heaven. But there weren't any others in sight, not that I could see. I slowly brought my pistol-grip crossbow up, aiming as I did my best to move as smoothly as possible. No sudden jerks, no sudden moves. I squinted, staring through the night vision scope attached to my bow, and let out my breath, squeezing the trigger as I steeled myself for the recoil. It wasn't bad, but I didn't want anything throwing off my aim. The arrow sailed through the air, and I held my breath, listening, trying to figure out whether or not I hit the goblin. There was a moment's silence, but then I saw the shaft sticking out of the goblin's heart. He went down with a shriek. I couldn't take a chance on running over to see if he was dissolving into the earth, but I crossed my fingers that my one arrow was all it would take. Some of the subfae didn't last long once they were killed. In fact, some of them, goblins being a good example, decayed with an alarming rapidity, bubbling into primordial ooze within minutes. They vanished as though they'd never existed, leaving the ground around them enriched thanks to the goo that had been their body. I waited for another moment, but saw no movement. My aim had been true. The goblin was dead. Pulling back, I glanced around to see where the others were. Hearn was flat on top of a tree branch about 20 yards away. He was eyeing something in the distance, and as I watched, he paused, then brought up his crossbow, aiming carefully. The arrow silently flew through the air, and a few seconds later, another shriek echoed through the forest. Hearn glanced down, catching sight of me, and blew me a kiss, then gave me a thumbs up. He was in his element, deep in the forest, on the hunt. I caught his kiss and blew one back, then slipped around the trunk of the cedar, creeping through the underbrush, trying to make certain I wasn't making myself a target. Victor was standing near Yutani, and when he saw me, he motioned for me to join them. I darted over, leaping over stone and root, landing softly on a patch of decaying leaves and moss. It occurred to me that I was so much more nimble than I had been less than a year ago. There were several reasons for this, but most of all, the change came when I went through the Kruharok, transitioning into full adulthood. Both bloodlines had come to the surface, and they both brought their skills into play. While I was still cautious, I was slowly beginning to accept my new abilities. The ramifications of what I could become continued to haunt me, but there was no going back. I could never again return to the ember I had been, and I wasn't sure I wanted to. I reached Victor's side, and he nodded to Yutani. The coyote shifter was grimacing as he leaned against a tree. The collar of his leather jacket had been ripped through by the blade, which meant it had been incredibly sharp, and I could smell the blood on him. "You need to stay out of sight," I said, keeping my voice low. "You don't need to play hero over a group of goblins. I killed one and Hearn took one out, so there are only 4 left." I turned to Victor. "What about you? You're hurt too."
"Not so bad. It sliced into me, but then bounced off. I'm good to go."
He paused, looking up into the trees.
"Look," he whispered, pointing.
I glanced up. Hearn was slithering through the treetops. He glanced down and saw us. Pointing to me, He crooked his finger. I gave him a nod. Okay, Victor. Keep an eye on us and take your cue from what we do. You, Tawny, stay out of sight. Don't play hero. I'm going up. I eyed the fir. It stood at least 80 feet high. And while the branches on the lower trunk were a little sparse, there were enough beyond about the 10-foot mark to use for climbing. Victor, can you give me a boost?
Sure thing.
He held out his hands, fingers interlocked. I stepped on his hands and he boosted me up. The half-ogre was 6'5", and when he lifted me up, I was able to grab hold of one of the lower branches and swing my way up into the tree. As I did my best to climb toward Hearn, I stayed near the trunk, trying to avoid making too much noise. A few moments later, and I was sitting on the branch below his. He swung his legs around so he was facing me.
If we climb another 15 feet, we should have an ideal place to aim at the others. We'll have to be quick, though, before they scatter.
Hearn turned to look at me, a feral spark lighting his eyes. He was lord of the forest, and he belonged to the woodland as much as any of the trees or wildlife. Hearn the hunter was not only a demigod, but he was my boss and my lover. And he was gorgeous. His shoulder-length wheat-colored hair was gathered back in a plaited weave, bound by a leather thong, and he was wearing a camo sweatshirt, black jeans, and a black leather jacket. He was covered in pitch and dirt, and he stared at me with a wild, intense stare.
Can you climb farther?
I nodded. I can. Lead the way. As he began to shimmy up the tree trunk, I grabbed hold of the next branch and swung my way up on it, following him as he ascended the tree. As we reached another large crotch in the tree, Hearn gestured, and I looked in the direction he was pointing. I could barely make out the movement of a couple creatures in the snow below. I looked at Hearn.
Goblins,
he mouthed, raising his bow. He could see in the dark a lot better than I could, but when I slid on a pair of night vision goggles, I could see them. There were 3 of them, and one a little farther away. I took my cue from Hearn, watching which one he was going after, and then raised my bow to focus on one of the others. We'd have to be quick to get to the others, but Hearn could move like lightning, and he seldom, if ever, missed with a bow. He took aim, and I waited. I'd shoot the moment his arrow went winging toward the enemy. And when the arrow was halfway to the goblins, I would loose my own. Hearn's struck true without fail, piercing the heart of the goblin. Mine missed by a fraction, but still tore into the goblin's arm. By that time, Hearn had knocked another arrow and let it fly, and the third goblin was down. I scrambled down out of the tree as Victor raced forward toward the fray. He was ahead of me, and by the time I got there, he had killed off the goblin I'd injured. With Hearn's 2 kills, that left 1 more. Where the hell did it go? I glanced around, hoping to catch a glimpse of the last goblin. And then, before I realized what he was doing, Hearn raced toward me, grabbing me and sending me flying to the ground. I landed in a pile of snow and immediately rolled to the side, hunching low as I realized what must have happened. I tried to catch sight of the goblin, who had sent a dagger winging my way. The blade had lodged in the tree that I'd been next to, and Hearn had managed to keep me from getting skewered. But before I could find him, Hearn sent an arrow winging in the direction the blade had come from, and there was another shriek. "He's toast?" I asked, standing up.
"Buttered and ready for breakfast," Hearn said. "That takes care of them all."
Victor and Yutani joined us, both looking tired and ragged. Yutani had managed to stanch the flow of blood drizzling out of his neck, though he looked queasy. "How can we be sure they're all gone? That we've found the entire gang?" I chewed on my inner cheek, hoping that we hadn't missed any. We had been out here at the ranch several times over the past 2 weeks, and each time only managed to catch glimpses of the goblins before they got away.
The owner told me he caught sight of 9 goblins this afternoon. With the one that Kippa and I caught the other day, that would make 10 in the raiding party. That's a standard size for nobs. There is no way to know for sure, except to wait and see if any other incidents happen on the ranch. But I'm fairly certain we took care of them.
Hearn wrapped his arm around me, hugging me to him.
I'm going to call this a wrap. Good work, guys. Let's head up to the cafe and tell Jed and Maxine the good news.
It was a long walk back to the cafe, but we'd left our cars there, so we had to make the trek anyway. By the time we reached the diner, it was 10 p.m. Shivering, I pushed through the doors, grateful for the warmth that enveloped me. The cafe was open until 11, and I tapped Hearn on the arm. I'm going to order something to go. We need to stop at urgent care for Yutani and Victor, but I'm hungry.
Make it quick, Hearn said. I don't want to wait too long before they get their wounds attended to. Goblins are notorious for using poison, and I don't want to take any chances.
Jet came over, smiling as he saw us. He and his wife were human, but they were friendly with most of the subcult, and their diner was frequented by shifters and fae alike.
You guys look roughed up. Can I take that as a good sign?
He folded his towel and threw it over his shoulder, straightening his apron.
We dispatched 9 goblins tonight. I'm pretty sure you shouldn't have any more trouble, although if you do, just give me a call and we'll come out and take a look again. But I think your problem's taken care of.
Hearn shook the man's hand, giving him a friendly nod.
How much do I owe you?
Jed asked, pulling out his checkbook.
We'll bill you. Give it a couple days, and then if you haven't had any more trouble from the goblins, let us know, and Angel will send you out an invoice. I want to make sure we've done the job right.
Hearn went above and beyond for some clients, especially those who were quick to pay and easy to work for. Jet smiled.
That's why I come to you when I have problems, Hearn.
Do you have anything quick to fix that we can get to go? I asked. We have to get these 2 over to urgent care, but I'm starving. My stomach rumbled, punctuating my remark. I rolled my eyes, blushing.
If you can give me 10 minutes, I'll have burgers, fries, and donuts all around. Shakes, too. Will that work?
Hearn nodded, glancing toward Yutani, who just shrugged.
That would be great. What flavor of shakes?
Jet asked, pulling out his pad.
And what do you want on your burgers?
I want chocolate, I said. Ketchup and cheese, no onions, mayo, or mustard. Hearn and the others put in their orders, and we settled into one of the back booths to wait. Less than 10 minutes later, Jet carried over 4 large bags.
Here you go. Burgers, fries, donuts, and shakes. They're on the house. I'll call you in a day or two and let you know if it looks like the goblins are back. I have no idea why they picked us to bother, but it was putting a dent in our business, that's for sure. Goblins don't care who they go after. If you have something they want and they think they can get it, you're going to be a target. Luck or ill luck of the draw, Hearn said.
We waved goodbye, and tired, grubby, and hungry, we headed toward Hearn's expedition. When we returned to the office, we stopped in at the urgent care clinic that took up the entire first floor of the building. It was open till 1 a.m., a good thing considering how many streeps, the street people, were living on the streets. While Yutani and Victor got themselves taken care of, Hearn and I took the elevator to the 4th floor, to the Wild Hunt Agency, which Hearn owned and ran. Talia and Angel had gone home for the night, but Charlie looked up as we entered, a startled expression on his face.
You surprised me. I didn't expect to see you this late. You take care of the goblins?
Charlie was a vampire, and he was in school, learning accounting so he could take over the books for us when he graduated. In the meantime, he came in at night and helped with data entry and anything else we might need him for. especially when we were overwhelmed with work. And lately, overwhelmed was an understatement.
I think so, Hearn said.
He turned to me.
I'll meet you in the break room. I need to take a leak first.
Okay. I gave Charlie a tired wave and headed to the break room, where I slumped into one of the chairs. It had been one hell of a night, and all I wanted to do was eat my food, take a shower, and fall into bed. I pulled out my burger, gratified to see not just one, but two cheeseburgers in the sack. The fries were large, and the shake was also large. Jet and Maxine didn't skimp when it came to portions or gratitude. Hearn entered the room as I took a bite of my food. The yeast scent of the buns and the smell of grilled ground beef were making me ravenous. He dropped into the chair next to me, reaching out to take my free hand. He brought it to his lips and kissed my fingers.
You were almost a shish kebab, he said, leaning back and stretching out his legs.
Thank you, by the way. You saved my life, yet again. I set down my burger and took a long sip of the shake. The frozen chocolate slid down my throat and I closed my eyes, grateful that we were done for the night.
Hey, it's what we do. We watch each other's backs. All of us.
But he had a worried look on his face. What are you thinking about? You, Tawny? I'm sure he'll be okay. Victor, too. They were hurt, but their injuries weren't terrible.
No, I know they'll be okay, even if the blades were poisoned. The urgent care clinic downstairs is good at what they do. No, I'm just mulling over something else, to be honest.
He glanced up at me, the blue of his eyes mirroring the first light of dawn. I leaned over and gave him a kiss on the cheek. So, what is it?
The growing unrest because of the Tuathon Brotherhood. The Fae aren't going to sit around and accept the role of scapegoat much longer. When the United Coalition shut them down, it stirred up very deep, very bad blood. And the hate groups against the Fae are getting worse. I've heard of no less than 4 vigilante groups starting up in the past few days. Pretty soon, things are going to blow sky high. Boom. Powder keg time. And I'm not sure what to do about it. We aren't making much progress.
I stared at my cheeseburger, trying to think of something to say that would make him feel better, but came up with zilch. Hearn was right. The situation was volatile and a true powder keg. If we didn't find an answer soon, there would be rioting in the streets, and a lot of innocent people would end up hurt, caught in the crossfire. Collateral damage wasn't just a theoretical term. Hell, I had my own scars to prove that. I was still scarred from some of the lacerations I had received in the blast that had taken out the Associated Shifters Credit Union. I had been in the way of a glass door that had shattered, turning me into a pincushion for hundreds of glass shards. I know, I said. I know. We sat there for a moment, staring at each other. And finally, I picked up my cheeseburger again. There was nothing we could do at this moment to solve the crisis. And that was another fact we knew.
Chapter 2.
The next morning, I woke to the smell of bacon and waffles wafting up from downstairs. I groaned as I sat up. I might have been in better shape than I'd ever been, but stints like last night's goblin chase still left me stiff and aching. I rolled out of bed with a yawn and glanced out the window. Rain was pouring down from gloomy skies. Typical winter weather. At least we'd left the snow behind, according to the meteorologists. I was ready for spring weather, even though we still had several months to go before the trees leafed out and flowers showed their heads. I had taken a shower the night before, but a hot soak under running water sounded too good to pass up, so I hopped in my shower and lathered up with black raspberry-scented bath wash. The water pelted my back, hot and stinging, easing some of the stiffness out of my muscles. After a few minutes, the ache began to unknot and fade, and by the time I finished, I was feeling more flexible. I wrapped my robe around me, bundled my hair up in a towel, and slid my feet in a pair of fuzzy slippers. Then, feeling ready to face the morning, I headed downstairs. Angel was in the kitchen, and breakfast was on the table. Mr. Rumblebutt looked up from his dish, purring as he dug into the new food we had picked up for him. Cats didn't normally like much change in diet, but now and then Mr. Rumblebutt decided he needed to change it up, and I'd have to search out a new food that he'd willingly eat. This time, it was ocean fish fillet dinner with a very stinky gravy, but he loved it. "Morning, Chica," Angel said. "You catch the goblins?" "Yeah," I said, fitting the filter into my espresso machine. I needed a buttload of caffeine today, and so pulled 5 shots into a tall mug, adding hot milk and chocolate syrup to make a power-packed mocha. We got them, finally. But not before they managed to skewer both Victor and you, Tawny. Neither got hurt badly, I hastened to add before Angel could worry. I almost ended up shish kebobbed, but Hearn saw the blade coming and knocked me out of the way. "I'd say I wished I was there, but not so much," Angel said, grinning. "Eat. Build up your strength." She handed me the bacon. "I've taken my fill. You can have the rest." Suddenly feeling happy, surrounded by good food and my best friend in the whole world, I accepted the bacon, sliding all 6 pieces on my plate. I added a waffle off the stack and slathered it in butter and syrup. As I forked a bite of the crispy, airy cake into my mouth, I glanced at Angel again. She was practically glowing. Her rich brown skin had a dewy radiance to it, and she was wearing a salmon-colored top and white jeans that set off her coloring. Her hair was neatly swept into a bun on the top of her head, and she had big turquoise hoop earrings on and a necklace to match. I maintained that Angel could have been a model if she wanted. She was tall enough and beautiful enough, but she'd chosen a vastly different route for her life. "You look luminous. Have a good evening?" I asked after swallowing the waffle. "Rafe and I had a wonderful evening. It was the first time since we were over on the peninsula and we've been together that he hasn't fallen into a depression. I'm hoping he's coming out of it now that he has the casts off." Rafe, one of the Dark Fae, was Angel's boyfriend. He had helped us out on a case and ended up with a broken leg, a broken arm, several fractured ribs, and a whole lot of bumps and bruises. He'd also been tortured, and that had definitely left an impact on the actor/waiter. "I hope so. I hate that he went through what he did. We still don't know who tipped them off to the fact that Rafe was a spy, but when we find out..." I paused, once again feeling my mood settle into a quiet melancholy. I glanced at the clock. "We have to be at the agency by noon for a meeting. I should get dressed and dry my hair." "We have time," Angel said, a note of concern in her voice. "I'm sorry. You seemed in such a good mood, and now you have that look again." I shook my head. "This whole mess with the Tuathun brothers is just a nightmare. I don't know what we're going to do, but whatever we do, it had better be soon. Hearn and I were discussing the subject last night. We're worried that Seattle's turning into a powder keg, ready to explode if we don't put a stop to the Brotherhood and clear the Fae from suspicion." Angel caught my gaze, nodding slowly. "I hear you, but finish your breakfast. We have enough time for you to eat. I'm going to put a load of clothes in the laundry. Do you have anything that needs washing?" I laughed. "I have 2 weeks of laundry. I just haven't had the energy to keep up with it lately. I'll wash a load of clothes tonight, though, so don't worry about it." I chugged down the rest of the mocha, feeling the caffeine stream into my bloodstream. "Oh, this is what I needed. Caffeine will get me going. I said, shaking my head as I went back to finishing breakfast. I found
sample complete. Ready to continue?